Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, fellow entrepreneurs in Orlando, Florida, and elsewhere if you're listening in. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show, where we talk to entrepreneurs and those who support the entrepreneurial community on the show to give other entrepreneurs hope, inspiration, education to build great businesses and to be a part of the entrepreneurial community. So we're going to say entrepreneurial a lot of times during the show. It's extremely hard to spell. So if you're typing this in, go to OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org, that's plural, and you'll be able to log into the show, listen in on these episodes, and see the great people and the founders that are building great stuff. So enough about me and enough about the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Mr. Brett Berkey, one of the founders of PaperStack, to the show. Brett, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. So we've had many conversations at our mastermind groups and over phone calls, and you are just up to some really disruptive things at your company. So why don't you tell us, who you are and what you're doing?
Cool. Yeah, so my name is Brett Berkey, like you said, and I'm part of a group called PaperStack, and PaperStack is a first of its kind trying to create some technology for a distressed debt market, which is basically mortgage notes, which it's kind of hard to understand at first, but basically when you buy a house, it's the deed, the actual piece of paper. Like, you don't actually own your house when you buy it. Until that last penny's paid, there's a piece of paper that basically says the bank owns it. So our platform sells those. And so it's disruptive in the sense that, this is fintech. So a lot of the things that are in fintech, just antiquated, just old. They're using Excel spreadsheets. They're sending sensitive data on these, if you ever been in like the banking space, it's kind of, there's some things that are just not up to date. And so this was created out of basically a need for my business partners. They had done some things and they had bought mortgage notes, their backgrounds in real estate. And they had some things where it just was scary. This wasn't, they're wiring money to people, like $200,000 at a time. They're like, who the hell is this guy that I'm wiring all this money to? And they're sitting over Excel spreadsheets and they're like, we put all the information in Box. And so they're thinking it's Dropbox. I'm like, there's nothing in my Dropbox. They're like, no, it's in Box. What is Box? And Box is a whole nother service like Dropbox. They're like, this is crazy. So and there's all this mess that's going on with the distressed debt. That's like, this industry needs some technology. And so it's kind of how that happened. And that's kind of how we got into this a couple years ago.
Got it. So you and your team, you found yourself having this issue when you're buying distressed assets, distressed debt. You would go and you would try to work these deals out, and it was completely behind the times. And you mentioned that this is a fintech technology, a fintech platform. What is fintech? Could you explain that to the audience?
Oh, sure. It's like financial tech. So there's a lot of things that are happening now currently in different industries. Fintech is more technology within the finance space. So you'll see different things like, I guess Rocket Mortgage might be a big one people know about. That's kind of fintech. There's different things that are happening in the lending space, different ways of lending, trying to get rid of mortgages that are giant pieces of paper, trying to bring it to the 21st century. People still have, these things that look like, they're huge. They're huge books of just documents. And it's like, they're scanning all this crap and they're faxing things. And they're like, what the 90s called, let's get back to reality. And let's go to what is now. And fintech was something that was born a couple of years ago. They have events now. Actually, they're going to have fintech here in Orlando. I think it's September, FinCon. So it's going to actually be in Orlando. So that's something to attend if you're local. So, and you like fintech.
So got it. You and the partners, the founders of the company, you guys saw as you were trying to buy these papers and sell them, you found that the industry was way behind its time, and you said someone should fix this. What inspired you guys to be the ones to do it?
Well, it was kind of a happenstance thing. So my background is in tech, and so I've had a had startups before, and a lot of background originally was in affiliate marketing, and then I had other things we did, just all different types of running traffic. And I ran into one of my partners at Publix, ironically. So he was there, and he's like, "Man, you're like in tech, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And he's like, "Can you stop by my office? We got this thing we're doing." And so they were trying to figure out a way to like outsource it, and I was like, they wanted me to consult at first. And so I started looking further into the industry, and I was like, I don't want to consult on it. Cause you know, if you do consulting work, it's like a, it's kind of like you work yourself out of a job. A lot of times I kept finding like, hey, they're like, well, we got all this traffic. Everything's going great. I guess we don't need you anymore. It's like, and that was the kind of the cycle I was on. Sometimes I was like, man, this sucks. I should do a crappy job, cause then I'll at least have something to do. But like, you know, if you do a good job, it's like, okay, you're doing great. And it's like, you kind of, you don't work yourself out of a job, but you are less needed because you get them to where they need to be. And it's like, okay, we're ranking good. Okay, this is great. You know, now it's just maintain. So I was looking for opportunity. When I saw this, I was like, this is the opportunity I want, you know, because there's so much disruption that can take place. So they had the idea, because there's other sites that have tried to do, I wouldn't say something similar, but they're like, kind of like, think of Craigslist, like, you know, how they have their own listing page, and they'll say like, you know, here, these things are for sale, but if you want it, you actually got to like go meet the guy, or, you know, you got to go call the dude, or you have to, it's not an online process. It's just basically a classified. And that's what a lot of these other ones are. It's like a classified thing. It's like, hey, here's some houses. If you like one, pick up the phone and call me or fax me over your information. So what we wanted to create was a totally digital process. So it's from, you know, start to finish. You never print anything. Everything's digital. You're texting back and forth. We're using a third party service called Twilio, where I don't know your number. You don't know my number. So you can't, it's all in a legal trail. So like, you know, there was things that were, you know, you had to go back on something, look and say, hey, what happened here? Or this wasn't what they said it was. And you had to like, God forbid, sue somebody or something, you know exactly what was said because you have a digital legal trail. And then that was something new. Notarization online, which still blows people's mind. It just became like fully legal in a lot of other states in 2017, but they started in 2016. The state of Virginia is allowed to notarize like pretty much all the other states in the country. So that was new. So that people had never done that before, never seen an online notary where your webcam comes up and you can wave at them. They ask you some funny banker questions and then they stamp your stuff on screen. That's legal. So, you know, and putting all those things into a digital process, that had never been done. So that was our goal. And in hindsight, it was a really lofty goal because it's not easy what we've done. It's taken years and we're on version 2 now, but man, I'll tell you what, had I known what we got ourselves into, I mean, I still would have done it because it's a lot of fun, and it's such a challenge, and it's such a great reward when we're at these conferences, because we literally, like, you know, people are just, their minds are blown. They're like, oh my, I can't believe you've done this. You finally cracked this egg. People have been trying to figure this out for years. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, it's really hard, but, you know, we did it. So I don't know if that answered the question or that was just a ramble, but, you know, wanted to.
No, it was good. All right. So you're in Publix. And some guy comes up to you and he goes, "Hey, you're in fintech? Like, explain how that worked." Because you in Publix.
No, no, I'm sorry. I should have better explained that. So he and I went to college together. So he was, he's a friend of mine from college. You know, he lives around the same area. I'd see him. I knew he was in real estate because before I would go to different conferences and he had been in real estate forever. I mean, straight out of college, he went into real estate. So he's been in it for a long time. And so I would see him around. And then, you know, he was a great friend in college. And we just, you know, once we got older, we had kids and stuff like that. So I just ran into him in public. So I was like, oh, what's up, Rick? And hey, how's it going? And you're like, how you been? Da, 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 da. And then it just was like, you know what? It dawned on him, like, wait, you're in tech. Because I, at one time when he had one of his real estate companies, I had come downtown here in Orlando. He had the he was right on Lake Eola. There's a house right on Lake Eola. He had like this whole second floor of this whole wholesale warehouse, like wholesaling houses and stuff. And so I was going to do some of his marketing back then. And this was 2008 or nine. It was a long time ago. And so he knew I was in marketing. So I was, so when we ran into each other, it kind of just like sparked something where he's like, hey, wait a second. It was kind of like one of those things. And it was,
okay.
No, and then I went down to his office.
So he wasn't walking down the aisle and he said, hey, you look like a guy who's in fintech.
No.
Okay.
No,
so
no,
you knew
no.
him prior. Okay.
No.
Just wanted to clarify that for myself. So you mentioned your background, affiliate marketing, technology. Talk to us about what affiliate marketing is and some of your experiences there.
Okay. Well, so affiliate marketing is basically referral marketing. That's the easiest way to understand it. When you refer someone from your website to someone else's website and they purchase, you get a percentage. That agreed upon percentages matters. You know, matters if it's a digital product or it's a physical product. Of course, with a physical product, you're going to have a lot lower percentage than you would with the digital product. Sometimes even digital products can be 100% of the purchase price because they're making money on upsells and back-end offers and things like that. So I started with that first, mostly out of just happenstance. I was a professional musician before all this, and I looked at some of the people that were my friends, and I was like, and they were older than me, we'd get done with a contract, and I worked for Disney, and this contract ended. It was great, but then they're like, I was like, what are you guys going to do now? And they're like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Maybe I'll go back to Louisiana and play in New Orleans. I was like, well, that sucks. Because they were like 50 years old at the time. And I was like, man, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be 50 and wondering where I'm going to go when a gig is done. So not always been in computers before. And so I was like, oh, I'll get online and start figuring things out. And so I just kind of stumbled across affiliate marketing. And I wasn't that great at it for a couple of years. I made some money here. I had a lot of weird niches that were like, I'll tell you one. And this is the only one I'll talk about. I was at the beach and I was noticing a guy, he had, it's called, I can't even say it right, but it's basically enlarged chest, you know? So it's like, you know, it's an issue. And I was like, man, that's one thing you just don't walk up to your buddy and ask, hey, man, what do you think of these? And you're like, you know, what do you think? Do you think I should do something like that? And I was like, that's a Google question. And there's probably got to be a product for that. So I started looking at that and I started creating things around that niche. And that's where my first kind of success came. And then I did stuff for insurance. I started getting into CPA, which is cost per acquisition, affiliate marketing. And I would do car insurance for different, like, car enthusiasts. And this was when Facebook advertising was first kind of coming out. And I would have ads based, like a Toyota like group. I would target people that were in the Toyota groups and put like Supras, like the new Supra that was coming out in like probably like now, you know, 2018 or something like that. And I would have special rates for Supra owners or something like that. And it was a CPA and people were like, oh wow, this is targeted towards me. So I would do the exact same thing for BMW, for Honda and all these. And so I did that. And then after a while, I met Greg Roulette at a Stompernet event, which Stompernet, that's old school stuff, but we were both musicians and we were like, let's make a product for musicians because musicians don't know how to market. Because my brother was a musician and I was at one of his shows. I was like, what are you going to do? You got all these people here. How are you going to get them to come to your next show? He's like, we got CDs in the back. I was like, well, yeah, but how are you going to get them to come back? And he's like, well, I don't know. I don't know. And so I was like, man, there's got to be a better way. So we teamed up and it was kind of like a test of each other. Cause I was like, you know, there's a lot of people that say, oh yeah, man, we'll do this. Oh yeah, for sure. Let's create a product. And it's like, sure, let's create a product. And then you actually reach out and they're like, not this. And they're, you know, there's always an excuse. And it's like, man, I got to find the real people. So when I was like, you know, we're talking to Greg, all right, let's do this. So we put our money where our mouth was. We put our money down. We created this product and it was called Band WP Themes. And it was a WordPress theme that had like 10 or 15 different skins where you could change the color based off your band type. You could put it in your SoundCloud, you could put it in your Twitter, and you could upload pictures. And it was so simple because back then they didn't really have specific themed WordPress themes. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it was, you'd maybe start with a basic WordPress theme, you'd have to maybe tweak it. So we created something specific. And then after that, I said, all right, let's put it into ClickBank. So we put it into ClickBank and it just started working. And it was a lot of fun. I turned into tech support though, because now you got this theme and all the bands want it, but then nobody still knows how to install it. And it's like, I'm in the forum, like, man, this is not what I signed up for. So that was what I did for a while. Yeah. It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was that product for these guys? You mentioned that you actually had a product. What was the product? I'm curious.
It's a product to get rid of man boobs. That's what it was. So I didn't want to say, but yeah, it was a product to get rid of man boobs. Because there's like, I found that it was something that sparked it was just an idea at the beach where I was like, man, that's, you know, it's an embarrassing thing. It's, you know, somebody wants to figure out how to fix that. And I found that like a lot of times those niches that really drive towards like a real try to, you know, they're really looking for a solution, they're willing to put money down. And so that was, you know, something that I started and it worked because, you know, people really wanted to fix that solution. So I kind of duplicated those for different things like cellulite and other things like that. This was back when I used to do stuff with Squidoo and Hub Pages. This was years ago. And then I created my own product on it. And so, but I started in that niche. But also at the same time, even me talking about it now, it's one of those things where it's not like, what do you do? Oh, I sell a product for, you know, like, it's like, you know, it's like one of those things where like, I do stuff online. You know, like, you know, just, it wasn't something, you know, like, wasn't walking around bragging about it, you know, so, but it worked, you know, so that was what I stayed in for a little bit. And then I met other people that did CPA, and that was a whole different ball of wax. I met some guys here in Orlando, and I, you know, I was like, it started, you know, show me more stuff on that. And I was like, oh, wow, this is where the real money's made, you know, in CPA. So did that for a number of years. And then I just kind of got burnt out, you know, And, you know, that's where I, you know, started to stop doing it. You know, things didn't work for me as well. A lot of those Google slaps came and, you know, it's just, things changed for me. You know what I mean? And plus I was getting older and, well, I don't know. I just wanted to get out of it. So I did. Sure. I still look at it like as you know, like kind of watching things, and I still do make some sales, but not like it was before. Like if I still have hosting sales that still come through for any clients, hosting sales. I do have a product that's almost done being approved in ClickBank right now, but it's, you know, it's just little things like that, but it's not like it was once before.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing your background. That's funny and exciting. And I mean, you're solving real problems that people were probably embarrassed about talking about, but you know, you solved the problem, a real problem, and you made money doing it. So kudos to you, man. So let's fast forward to where you guys are now. You're a part of a team, and you guys are building a disruptive fintech technology that's really revolutionizing the way real estate investments and investors are doing business. Okay. So as you guys are building this, what stage of the business are you currently in? And how is business going?
Business is going really good. We're in, I would say, growth stage. We're about to come out with our version 2. We came out with basically, we say proof of concept, but it's not a minimum viable product because, you know, it's a huge product. I mean, it is a massive product. You have, you know, listings, you have a transaction, you have like multiple APIs. It's not just, hey, let's throw this up over a weekend. It took like, honestly, almost year and a half to 2 years almost to get the first version out. And it wasn't because we were trying to half-ass it or just kind of like throw something out. It was because it just took that long. There's so many moving parts. We took a process. It takes honestly like 3 or 4 weeks. And think of it when you buy a house. I'm going to buy a house today. You know, it's like, you know, like that takes months. And so we've taken that entire process and put it digitally. So we did release the initial version at a conference in September 2017. We started getting sales directly thereafter, and we kind of slowed down in December just based off just regular business cycles, and then we've ramped back up. And I think last month we would have had 30 transactions going through if we had this thing called pools, which basically a pool is basically you buy more than one house. So you're buying, you know, like you like 10 things on the site, I want to buy all 10. Well, we didn't have that feature yet. So that's for version 2. And then people are like, well, great, 30 sales, you guys are rocking it. It's like, well, yeah, but you gotta wait. These are houses. You know, like, you know, people are dropping right now. There's a $900,000 transaction going down. You're like, it's like today or tomorrow. Like it's going through. So, I mean, it's not just like, we're not selling t-shirts here. You know, it's not like, hey, here's 20 bucks. You know, it's like, you know, there's people are buying someone's mortgage and they have to buy with cash because, you know, it's just how it is. So it's a different type of market. And I'll tell you, I never would have thought I would have done something like this. Platform marketing is the hardest thing I've ever done. You know, so it's one thing if you're doing B2C, you know what to do. And B2B, maybe it's just, it's different, but you know what to do. But with the platform, it's like, holy crap, I got to work the seller and I got to work the buyer and I got to make sure all this works. And being at the software, I got all these other roles like onboarding, customer service. Like right before we jumped on here, I was having somebody hit me up at Intercom. Like, you know, I'm having conversations, I'm doing this, but I'm also, you know, talking to buyers, going to conferences, talking to sellers. And it's kind of this, one of those things, it's the chicken and the egg. I got to have the, both. I got to have the right buyers and I have the right sellers so they can work. So all that to say is also too, we're in the growth stage. So right now we're doing a funding round, mostly just to get us to kind of pour some gasoline on the fire. Because we've proven it's not a, hey, maybe this might work. Like, no, this thing's working. We're having people, I don't even know who these people are anymore. They're on the site, they're doing stuff. Like, I've never met this person, never met that person. This is cool. It's really neat to see it because it's like, wow, I don't even know how they found it. I mean, I guess I could go in the analytics and find it, but I'm not that concerned at that point. But like, these people are just doing things. It's kind of taking on a life of its own. And so with version two, it's like, all right, version one was basically figured out, see if it works, see if people like it, and then get major feedback. So I honestly picked up the phone like 2 weeks, and we have a called everyone in the database if they answer the phone. I'd send them a cold email too, and then I'd call them. They had a phone number. And I'd say, tell me what you'd like to see. What would you want to see? What's the ultimate thing? And then I put a giant list, and we would have our weekly meetings, and we'd go through each thing and see how many, which ones had the most tally points. All right, that's a feature we got to go with. We got to fix that. And so we would, you know, start to put these things in. And so version two is basically like what everyone's asked for. Or people said, it won't work because, it's like, tell us why it won't work. And they'll say, oh, it won't work because of this. So we say, okay, we'll figure out a way to fix that. And it's honestly been the biggest puzzle piece. And I have to say kudos to the developer, Mike, because I mean, the way he figures this out, I mean, it's just like, I wouldn't have thought of it. I honestly would not. My mind doesn't work like that. But he's figured out ways to do some amazing things that, you know, I'm like a giddy kid when I see it. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at that! Wow, that's amazing. And it's, you know, it's something I still see every day, but it's still like, wow, I can't believe this is it. It's so smooth and it's so interesting to see, because once it comes out and the version two's out, I mean, there isn't competition really right now, but there definitely won't be any after the second version. We're too far ahead to catch up. I think that's what, you know, in my mind, it's a different ball of wax, the second version. So.
Awesome. So you're working with investors who are buying and selling paper, right? You have a multi-site platform. You mentioned a few terms that I would just want to clarify to the audience, B2B, B2C. So B2C is business to consumers. So think of like Walmart selling to a consumer. There's B2B. Think of like a business selling to another business. And what Brett was saying is he has this multi-sided place where you have to work with the buyer and the seller and make all the details work. So, you know, so you're saying that's a challenge and it's a lot harder than just one aspect. Like back in the day when you were doing affiliate marketing, just focus on one side of the transaction, right?
Yeah, I mean, because it's a platform, so it's kind of like running my own eBay. You know, it's different because I got to keep. It's one of those things you want to keep everyone happy, and you want to make sure that you're doing the right by both sides. So you want to make sure that you're treating the sellers, you know, and trying to figure out what's their pain points and how can you make it work for them. Because you want them at this point, we're still kind of new, but I'm trying to change like a cruise ship. I'm trying to turn this around, saying, hey, there is a better way. We've created it. You know, just give it a shot, use it. And then, so I need to try to work it into their routine. And that's hard. That's hard. So that's a lot of me talking to them, me being present, me being in groups, me, you know, remarketing, me sending out things on the email lists, showcasing their asset, or I say assets, which basically means their houses, the stuff they've listed. You know, other people aren't doing that for them. And I'm not doing it and asking for, you know, hey, you know, a pat on the back or something. It's like they put stuff on there. I'll create a special email and send it out to everyone in the database. I'll use their houses that they're selling as ads. I'll put it in different Facebook groups. I'm doing more marketing than they're doing for their houses. And I'm not asking for anything except we get a transaction fee, of course. But the whole point is that I want them to see that I'm going above and beyond for them. I would even, like, sometimes I'm saying, hey, you want your stuff on paper stack? They're like, yes, yeah, so send me everything over and I'll do it for you. I'll put it in there. I don't want you to, you know, have to waste your time. This is something how ActiveCampaign, I learned this from ActiveCampaign, that's how they grew, because they had to try to, you know, take it away from those, you know, established ones like Infusionsoft and the bigger guys, Marketo's and Infusionsoft. And people are like, well, I don't want to have to change my system and, you know, export my database and da 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 da. And so ActiveCampaign, they still have this feature, but it's not as, you know, big of a deal anymore. But they would say, just give me everything you got and I'll put it in there and I'll make it work for you. And then you just basically have to just log in. So that's what I do now with the sellers, basically doing that. And with a lot of the buyers, it's a lot with, you know, talking to them, trying to figure out what they're trying to do. It's always a learning process because everyone's at a different stage. So I don't know if this guy's been buying or they just started. And if they've just started and they come to the site, I'm not like legally allowed to give like, hey, this is what I think you should do. You know, it's like, that's, I'm a platform, you know, I am just here to provide a service. So I usually say, hey, look, we work, these are some really good educators. I think you should go get educated first and then come back. Or you know, or hey, I'm going to see, what's your email? I'm going to see some resources. I read these over, you know, and then I'll follow up. I'm going to put a task and say, hey, did you get a chance to read these resources? Let me introduce you to somebody. So at that point, it's kind of one of those, it's the, you know, the Brian Tracy thing, get before you receive, to, you know, the idea of I provided so much value to them up front that I helped them learn and get better acquainted with the system and better acquainted with the industry that you'd hope, you know, a lot of reciprocation. They'd come back and say, wow, you know, I learned from him. He taught me so much. Now it's time for me to buy. I'm going back to PaperStack. So I have to manage those two things. And those are weird things that aren't really, you don't learn in a, you know, I don't know. It's not an online course. There should be, but it's just one of those things you just kind of, I just figure out. You know what I mean? So that's why it's hard to run a platform, because it's not very cold. It's not like a, just come here and check out and you're done. You know, it's like, it's different. You know, there's a lot of relationship management, which, you know, it's kind of how I feel I've morphed into more than just traffic generation.
Sure. So, I mean, that is one of your roles there is, you know, business development, sales. Mm-hmm. Give us some tips and tricks because you are really, really good at this and you're doing a really great job at bringing in new opportunities, both on the buying and selling side. Give us entrepreneurs, give us some tips and tricks or things that you do as a business developer to help grow your SaaS product, your software as a service platform.
Well, let's see here. On the buyer side, I kind of found that it's one of those things where, you know, recommendation is probably the best way of someone, you know, looking at your business and saying, hey, somebody I respect recommended this company, I'm going to use it. And, you know, so I had to think of how can I do that in a way where it doesn't come like, hey, come to PaperStack, we're awesome. You know, it's like buyers are like, why are you awesome? It's like, I don't want to say that. It's like one of those things where you see someone who says, I'm the best at this. It's like, let other people say you're the best at that. You just do you, and then other people say you're the best at that. You know, so don't do that. So I was like, how do I work myself into this mold? What I've done is I really focus on, you know, working with the educators. You know, how can we add some stuff to the educators that it could be beneficial to the educators? Because in my mind, if I make the process of what we have really simple, the whole transaction engine, it takes a lot of the fear out of, you know, sending money and doing the stuff that scared us in the beginning. So working with the educator, we can say, hey, this is something that will help more people want to do this because now it's easier. And so I, you know, spend a lot of time, we're on all the conferences with them, trying to get my business partners to speak at the conferences because they're the ones that are more note specific. And so getting them to be in with the educators and where it's almost like the educators refer us. And a lot of the educators, I'll say, hey, look, we have an affiliate program. And so, hey, I'm going to give you an affiliate link, but this isn't for everybody. This isn't like, we don't have it just open. It's not like a page in the footer, like come and be an affiliate. It's like, you know, strategic partnerships. Like, hey, you know, I know you get the, you know, huge list and we want to make it worth your while. You know, let's get on your podcast or your presentation or your conference. But, you know, when they do come to our site, we don't want you just to be a thank you. We want there to be a tit for tat. You know, here's an affiliate link and it's good for life. And so like things like that, I've been working my way into the educator space because if I become part of that psyche of, hey, this is how it's done, then I don't really have to market to the buyers as much. And we're going to still have those buyers that are coming in off AdWords or Facebook or LinkedIn or different groups. And, you know, that's just part of it. You have to have those things going, you know, like I'm always going to have most of that running AdWords or Facebook, mostly remarketing, you know, like once I get them there, that's, how you always have to have it going. But I guess for other entrepreneurs to learn, try to find the best strategic partners that could be your amplifiers. So for me, that's how I do it. Like one of the persons that I became really a good friend with, you know, she has her hands in everything. And I know if, you know, if I can help her, she can definitely help us. The same with other vendors. We have other vendors that we use their services on PaperStack. Well, I know one of the vendors has basically the entire industry. Like he basically is the industry for those type of things that are needed for processing mortgage notes. Well, guess who I'm going to partner with? I'm going to partner with that guy. So trying to find those strategic partners, and I have. And I mean, we send them, like, seriously, on Christmas, we send them a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. I mean, like, you know, like, hey, Merry Christmas. Johnny Walker Blue is not cheap. And so he was pretty excited about that. It's like, wow, okay. So it's one of those things to just say, hey, we appreciate it. We appreciate you. And so, like, instead of me trying to market to the buyers, think as an entrepreneur, how can I find those strategic partners and how can we all benefit each other? And that's how I've done it. And that's kind of why I say relationship marketing instead of just, you know, the cold AdWords type stuff. And then I guess on the seller side, I guess this is something too that my business partners, they kind of think it's funny. I didn't ever see it like that, but once somebody's in my crosshairs, they don't leave. Like, you know, like no person's getting out of my crosshairs once I got them on there. I mean, so even for like investors, big sellers, people I want to speak to. I mean, I have a system that there's stuff that I will send cold emails, and it's a HubSpot plugin that you can get for your email, but I can see when they read my email. So it automatically pops up and say, hey, so-and-so, I read your email. It's like, perfect. Then I'll jump over to LinkedIn, find something that they wrote about, comment on it, you know? And so like, it's like they're reading my email and all of a sudden they get another, you know, thing that's like, this guy's everywhere. You know, like, so I just try to become a part of the world. Yeah. And if they don't respond to that email, I have them in pipelines instead of active campaign where I got to reach back out to them. And I'll reach back out to them. And I don't make it annoying because it's a term I've coined. It's called persistence annoyance, where it's like, it's a balance between being persistent and being annoying. So like, I don't do it like every week. I do it like every couple of weeks. And I have my 10 or 15 people I'm working at a time. And then I'll, you know, find out something they did. Or like, I just got one of the guys that, huge, very important guy. He won an award for like someone of the year. And I, you know, congratulate him on LinkedIn. And then after that, I send him a message on LinkedIn because we became like friends or whatever. And I was like, hey, look, you know, congratulations on your award. When you guys get done with all your ceremonies and stuff, I'd still love to give you a demo of PaperStack. And, you know, he finally said, let's do it. And so it's one of those things where it's just persistence and not taking really like no's are, you know, good, but I want to know why I know. So like, you know, we have investors we're doing now. And I usually try to find an angle. So like there's one guy I want to talk to. His name's Brett. So of course it's the best angle, right? I can, you know, tell you, you know, the email line is what's up guy with the awesome name, you know, something like that. I mean, most people probably wouldn't have sent that, but if I can read through his writing on his blog, I can kind of tell his personality that where he'd be like, this guy's kind of cool, you know, just based off the first initial conversation. And I got a meeting with him next Tuesday. So, you know, like, it's like one of those things where it's being persistent and finding the angle and not being cold. When you send out the emails to the people that you're trying to work with as maybe a vendor or you're trying to sell to somebody, a cold email is not going to get there. But if you say something along the lines of something in the body and then at the bottom, I'll find out if they're, you know, Florida Gator or something. I'll say, go Gators, you know, fellow alumni as well. That's all I have to say that I actually did a little bit more than just cold email you. They see that I actually reached out and found out information about them. And then lastly, for conferences, like I have, I've never really termed it, but I make a dossier, like it's a secret dossier. So I'll go down all the speakers and then I'll go down all the attendees. And then I will literally like, I use Adobe InDesign. I have a template now, but it was basically like a catalog before. And I catalog each of these people and then I assign them to each one of us as team members. So we're talking to somebody next week. They're from Chicago. My buddy or my partner TJ is from Chicago. He's going to be leading that conversation because there's an instant bond. You know, it's like, how can I break the walls down? And that's kind of how I think with sales and trying to do those relationships is find the easiest way to break the wall. You know, we were meeting with some bankers here locally. And he said he lived locally. Are you from here locally? He said, yes. What school did you go to? And then he told me that I knew somebody he knew. And all of a sudden, that wall is just gone. You know, so like, you know, it's like finding the easiest way to get over the wall so you can actually have real conversations. Hope that makes sense.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it seems like, I mean, you're really passionate about, you know, sales and marketing. You're good at it. I think that's a hesitation that a lot of people have for fear of rejection or fear that they're going to say something wrong or send the wrong message or just look like a total fool. How did you learn to get over that? Or maybe give us some advice as to like how to begin your career in sales and marketing for those out there who are founders who need to sell because they're early stage founders and they don't have a salesperson or a sales team, so they have to sell. What advice do you have for them to get over that fear?
I'd say you have too much invested not to. So like in your pride, it's just, you need to swallow that, because if you put money into your project, I mean, we're talking, I'm saying like, you know, I don't even keep track anymore because it's just too long, but you know, like all these years in, I'm not going to let it fail anymore. Like I'm too passionate. And if someone tells me I'm an idiot or what, I don't care. And I don't see the wall. I mean, you have to just say what I'm building is too important to let my ego be bruised and say, I'm going to do it regardless. I mean, that can be hard for a lot of people. And I know that's not easy. I did have an extent when I first came back, when I was a musician, I came back here and I did sales, but I did like outbound sales. And I had to make 100 calls a day. And so I had one of those little tickers that people use at like nightclubs, you know, like to see how many people are getting in. And I would hammer 100 calls a day. And, you know, at the first 4 or 5, it sucks. But then, you know, 15, 20, I would work from home. I was doing my laundry and talk to people. And they're telling me to go, you know, F you F that. Like, okay, sure, thanks, bye. You know, like, but after a while, you just, they're like it's alligator skin. Like there's a experiment. I forget who did it, but he tried to get rejected so many times in a day. It was like the no experiment. He just would ask weird things. And once you get so many no's, it starts to not have the same effect. And then you have to learn objections. And then actually, a lot of people don't find a passion for it, but it's really just psychology. Like understanding people's, their tells, you know, listening to them, doing the, you know, famous give your offer and then just shut up and just let them sit there, because silence is really hard for people. You know, if you just let them sit there, eventually when they speak, you know that you have the upper hand. There's lots of things like that. You kind of develop a passion for it. It doesn't have to be your main passion, but if you start to say, oh, I know this, oh, I saw that, then you kind of go, oh, this, now it's a game in my mind. It's like, it's more of a game because it's just human psychology. And if you can read people, you can see them and you know how to get past the gatekeeper, or you can figure out their angle, it almost becomes fun at that point. Because then once you finally close it, all you have to do is close one deal if they're trying to, you know, if they're trying to get into someplace. As soon as they close one, then they realize, oh man, that was awesome. And it's a rush. And then it just becomes another, like a thrill seat in a sense. Maybe. Some founders won't. And then I would say for those, you might need somebody, but just always remember as a founder, your product's too important to let it fail. And if it requires you swallowing your pride, just do it. You mean?
Yeah. Cool. So, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, I know you're just listening in, but when he was talking about making these outbound calls and doing his laundry and like how he started to make a game of it, he actually was going through the motions of ironing his shirt, like, you know, in the air. So I just want you guys to picture Brett sitting there on the phone as a telemarketer back in the day, ironing his shirt and people yelling at him. And he's like, okay, cool. Have a good day, you know. So I thought that would be a good mental image for you guys to see Brett doing. So Brett, this is really valuable. This is really good. As you guys are building PaperStack here in Orlando, why did you guys choose to build here in Orlando, and why are you staying here in Orlando? Like, what do you really love about Orlando?
Well, I mean, Orlando is vibrant. There's always something to do. It's a growing tech scene. I mean, like, I'm down here at Canvas now, and it's only getting bigger. I mean, people are moving in all the time, and I think people need to realize that there's something happening here with the entrepreneur scene here in Orlando. I've been here for a long time, and it wasn't always like this. And I go to different cities. And then, you know, you can kind of see it, but it's not like it's happening here. I think there's a lot of opportunity. People don't understand that. Like, they're like, oh, Orlando, is that an entrepreneurial hub? I'm like, oh yeah, you know, there's only like NASA down the street, Disney, and there's all these other things in between, the UCF Research Park. I mean, there's a lot of really big things happening here in Central Florida, from here to the West Coast, that it's a good place to be a part of. There's the simulation, one of the best simulation places are here in Orlando. Some of the best, rocket and space stuff. I mean, we're launching the Falcon 9, not from someplace else, right over here in, Cape Canaveral. Not saying you want to do that, but there's a lot of other tech stuff here. I mean, there's a lot of big tech companies here. Univision. That's a television network. But there's big companies here. There are investors here, and the people that are ahead of different policies, the mayors and people working the city, they're working hard to make it better. And so is a lot of the people that are around here that are influencers in the space. They're putting all in to kind of say, this is a place that needs to be on the map. And it makes sense. It's way cheaper than California. Not to say we're comparing ourselves there, but it's way cheaper in terms of a lot of different things. And there's a lot to do. And then it's a great place for families. If people wanted to stay here in Orlando, I mean, there's a lot of A-rated schools. And we have great state universities if they ever wanted to go to school after that. So, I mean, I see Orlando as a great place to be. I've lived other places, and I kind of gravitate back to here mostly because it's nice. I mean, it's a good place to be.
Yeah, I agree. This is where my family and I are. This is where we live, and this is where we're building. Let me ask you a question. As you're building with these great people, you mentioned some great resources downtown. Do you have any shout outs to resources or people in the Orlando area that you think are doing a really great job or that you just want to say thanks to?
Well, I mean, you definitely want to get on if you're not on the meetups for like Starter Studio. They have some really cool stuff. They have lunch and learns that are going on all the time, and really good people that are, they really know what they're talking about. There's some investors that come in. Scott Ritchie did one last week that was it was mind blowing. Like, I was like, I need those slides. It's like one of those things where if you're like a entrepreneur and you're not down at like Canvas, or you're not part of the Orlando Tech Association, you're doing yourself a disfavor. Because I mean, the people that are at these events are movers and shakers, and they're not people that don't know what they're talking about. Some of these guys have exited big time companies. And so they've been there. And the funny thing is, these people are so willing and open with their knowledge that it's, you're just so thankful that they're not, they didn't just make their money and then they took off. Now they're on an island somewhere. They're here. They're giving back. People that are helping now are people that have done it, and they're giving right back to the companies that are just starting. Instead, Starter Studio, it's right here in Canvas, and that happens every so often. There's the Orlando Tech Association. Yeah, Jim Thompson, Carlos Carbonell. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool people here that are making this the base. And if I was gonna give a shout out to be any of the people on Canvas, all downtown, it's where it's at.
Cool. Very cool.
Put a tin and taco. You gotta eat there. You haven't eaten there. Have you eaten there?
What's the name of it?
Tin and taco.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's really good food. You gotta try it out. But they're not helping startup. They're keeping us fed in the startup scene.
There you go. Well, Brett, thanks for sharing, your mission and what you guys are doing. Where do you see the future of your business going?
Well, it's a good question because we've been working on that for a while on our pitch deck, and our 5-year goal is to bring the mortgage note space to be where something like Betterment is at. So Betterment is a system that's using AI technology that basically does trading for you, and you're not having to pick your individual stocks. And you just kind of put, I want this much money invested, and then it does magic. So the only way we see that mortgage notes can get to the general public is if there's some kind of system like that in place. And that's where we're heading. That's our 5-year goal. We think we can achieve it because, the people that are behind us, my partners, and then, we're going to hopefully be expanding and bringing on more of the tech side. It'll be possible because we know what we know now, and we know we could if we were there. So it's just a matter of getting to that point. So in 5 years, you'll be able to just go to PaperStack. We might not even call it PaperStack at that point, but it'll be the same type of concept, same type of engine. And you say, I want to invest, $15,000 in a, we can't say exact numbers because that's just illegal. But I want a double digit return, or I want a good return, and you'll be able to get it, and you'll be able to do it in a manner that's not investing in something like Exxon, no offense to Exxon, but you're like, it's a positive impact investment. You're putting money into helping save someone's house, because our goal at PaperStack is to save 10,000 homes. The reason why is because we want to give the American dream back to the American people. And a lot of times during these banks, you're just a transaction. You're just a number. There's people on the other ends of those, on the other end of those phones, dude. They have families, they have kids, they have, you know, a life. And if we can't, at the core of it, if you can't supply Maslow's bottom rung of safety and security in a home, all the other stuff doesn't matter. Self-actualization is never going to happen if you can't get this right. And so that's our core focus, is to figure out how we can create PaperStack to be something where an investor could come, invest in something that's a positive impact, and then also see change in their local neighborhood, which benefits everyone. Because then if the house is paying again, taxes are paid, the city's better, you know, lawns are mowed, there's business there. So it helps in all different aspects, but the five-year plan is to be able to make this not such a fringe investment, but to make this mainstream. So where it's like, I got $1,000, should I invest in something that's gonna help save my neighborhood or save the impact of America? Or should I put it into something that's deforestation and, you know, they're making canola oil or something. You're like, you don't know what some of these major corporations are doing. They're putting money in some places you might not like, but you might not know that. With our product, you know, hey, this is going towards saving American homes. I like it. So that's a five-year goal, you know, and it's, I think we're going to get there.
So you guys, and I'm glad you brought this up, you guys are on a mission to save 10,000 homes here in the U.S. Talk to us about how that happens with what you guys are doing. How do you actually, you know, how will you guys accomplish that?
Well, so here's the thing, is when you buy a mortgage note, keeping somebody in their home actually gives you better return than actually having to foreclose on them. Because foreclosure, no matter what, if it's a $500,000 house or it's a $50,000 house, costs about the same, you know, roughly. It matters how long they drag it out. If it's a judicial state, which means they have this long, laborious process, or it's a non-judicial state. But most of these people that bought a home didn't really, usually they don't want to leave. You know, they have roots there. Maybe they have their kids are in school there, and they don't want that on their record. I got a foreclosure on my record. You know, that doesn't look good. So we found through our own process, if we just talk to the people as humans and say, what happened? And they're like, what? What do you mean what happened? Like, tell us your story. And they're like, what? Really? And then they tell you your story. And it's like, look, what can you afford? And they're like, I can afford this. I said, okay, let's make it work. And then so you make it work, and all of a sudden, you not only feel good because you're helping to save someone's family, and you're helping to maintain order in that family. You also, a lot of times when you're buying these mortgage notes, you're doing it at such a discount, because these things are being liquidated from big banks, that you can make really good returns. So you're buying something, say they were upside down $150,000. You bought it for $50,000. Say, hey, look, Joe, I know your house, you owe $150,000. Your house is only worth $120,000. But how about this? I'll give you $20,000 worth of equity in your own home. You only owe me $100,000. They're like, what? Seriously? Now they have equity. Now they're invested again, because they're like, I have $20,000 worth of equity in my house, and you bought it for $50,000. And with a mortgage, you know, for the first 15 years of a mortgage, it's nothing but interest anyhow. You know, just look at your statement when you pay your mortgage every month. You're like, man, I only paid $50 this month. That was, you know, so it's all interest, all front loaded. So you make a lot better return by keeping people in their home. You help to save a family at the same time, and then you can turn around an entire community. So now that person's contributing. We even have places, we work with nonprofits to say, okay, now you've got your house back. Do you need resume help? And they're, what? Are you guys a bank? What are you? So like, you know, we give them resume help. We help them get the resume back in order. Help to almost find a job if they don't have one. So the whole idea is to do more than just try to make a return. Because those days are just making a return and saying, I make money. It's not cool anymore. We all know that the millennials, we want to make a difference. And the only way to make a difference is to make it so that it's a really good return, but you're also doing something very positive at the same time. So it's an impact investment, not just an investment.
That's awesome. So as we are wrapping up our time, man, this has been a really fun conversation. What kind of people should look to learning more about PaperStack? Like, what kind of people do you would naturally want to use this kind of product or service, or should learn about using this product or service?
I mean, there's a varying range. I guess one of the ones that we talk to are people who have self-directed IRAs. So there's different types of these investments. So there's the one that's the one I'm talking about when you actually call the person out and say, hey, what happened? That's what's called a non-performing, meaning they're not paying. And there's a lot more work involved in that one. And then there's the one that are called the re-performing, which is basically, it's a mortgage. You're not a landlord. When their toilet breaks, that's on them. They own that house. You're like, you know, you don't call your bank when your toilet breaks, you fix it. So you can buy a performing mortgage note for say 7 or 8% return, like, you know, annually. And if you're just looking to passively invest and make 7 or 8% return, you can buy one of these things on the platform and just sit back. And God forbid something bad happens, guess what? You got a house and you also got all these payments. And then you can just do it again because you're the bank. So it's a safe investment for somebody who has a self-directed IRA. They can use that to invest. People that are real estate investors that are running out of inventory. So they're, you know, these wholesalers that have, you know, there's some places here in Orlando that they, you know, they're buying at par. They're buying these houses. You'll see them on like they buy the market value. So they're not buying at a wholesale discount. And then they will buy your house as is, and then they'll hold it, and then they'll do all the work. So there's wholesalers are getting squeezed. You know, if you're just trying to hustle and you try to hustle and get a wholesaling flip, it's gotten a lot harder. So in the mortgage note space, there's a lot of room still. I mean, there is just so much inventory out there. Just if you do some research, I mean, as of 2016, they liquidated like billions of dollars of this stuff. And it still has not come what we call the waterfall. It hasn't got all the way down to like the regular investor. Reason why is because these big massive hedge funds take like 50 millions at a time and they'll work it down. But so it's a great investment for real estate investors. It's a great investment for somebody who doesn't want to invest in the stock market anymore because they're scared of it. Some goes on the, you know, CNBC and sneezes and things drop 50 points, or after some, you know, God forbid somebody's tweeting or something like that and things change and you know, it's unpredictable, you know, but you know, with a mortgage, there's going to be ups and downs. Yes. But if you're in the banker's position, just think of it like that. If it goes, the house goes up, guess what? They cash out because they want to refi. Well, great. Now you just got all that money that was going to take you 30 years to get. Boom, you got it all right now. So it's a great investment for a real estate investor that wants to hold for returns, or if they still want to play their wholesale right, they can do it. You know, they can take the house back and foreclose. We don't, you know, suggest it because we want to, you know, do the impact part. But so people that have self-directed IRA, real estate investors, people that are scared of the stock market, it's a great investment class for them.
Awesome. So for people out there who would like to know more about the company and know how to connect specifically with you to have a conversation with you, to learn more, to, you know, or just have a conversation, how could people find more about you and your company?
It's just PaperStack without a K. So PaperStack.com. And then just Brett, BRETT at PaperStack.com. And then, I mean, I respond to every email and be more than happy to, you know, chat with anybody around here. We're always, you know, what's that one book? Never Eat Alone, right? Or that one. That's a good one. So yeah, I'm always down for a conversation or lunch or chill. You know what I mean? So yeah.
Awesome. Well, Brett, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing your experience, the advice about business development, and just the mission that you guys are on to save, you know, all these homes for people. I appreciate what you're doing. I'm proud to know you. And man, just thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen in the audience, thanks for tuning into the Orlando Entrepreneur Show, you know, listening to conversations and interviews with great entrepreneurs here in Orlando, Florida. We appreciate you, and we just hope you have a wonderful day and hope you become an entrepreneur yourself if you're not one. So thank you for visiting, and we'll talk with you guys on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.